Welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show with Steve and Trish, sponsored by our friends at Paychex. Today, we are going to be talking with our friend Jean Meister about a recent survey that she's published called the 2021 HR Sentiment Survey, which really gets to the most pressing and important priorities for HR leaders today and going into next year. And there's some great data in that survey. And it's going to be exciting to talk about that, Trish. But first, the question of the day for you.
Yeah. Okay.
What is the most imaginative or fun or your go-to insult? If you want to insult somebody, not harshly, but maybe just give that little poke to the ribs. You want to kind of burn somebody a little bit. Do you have an insult you like?
The first thing that came to mind was bless your heart. I don't know. It's like that little Southern kind of, oh, bless your heart. I don't know. It's really bad, right? So yeah, that's the first one I thought of. How about you? What do you think?
I have one, Trish. I have a standard one, and here it is. It's, I'll look at the person I want to insult and I'll say, who's that clown?
Oh, no, you don't.
Yes. And here's why this is the best insult, because it's a double jab, because first of all, you're calling them a clown, right? Which is bad. Yeah. And second, you're implying that they're not even one of the better known clowns.
Oh my goodness. Steve.
That's why that one's my favorite. So there you go.
Okay. Well, now we know. I was a big fan when I was working like in corporate of having like secret insults. Have you ever had those where you worked?
Probably.
So like my biggest thing, my whole team knew if I said no worries about like, if somebody asked me and I was no worries, that was bad. That was really bad. That was like my way of saying like, oh no, I'm not down with this at all, but no worries. I got you.
Okay. Well, maybe our guest has an insult she likes. Well, she has a moment to think about it. Let me introduce her formally and welcome her back to the show. We are very excited to welcome Jean Meister back to the show. Maybe her fourth appearance, something like that. I'd have to look back through the archives, Jean, but it's a number of appearances. Fourth. If you get to the fifth appearance, you do win a prize. We could talk about that later. But Jean is the founding partner of Future Workplace, an HR advisory and research firm. She's also the best-selling author of three books, including The Future Workplace Experience, The 2020 Workplace, and Corporate Universities, Lessons in Building a World-Class Workforce. She lives down in the New York City area with her husband, daughter, and two dogs. That's cool. And according to Jean, I like this part, Jean. I love the new bio here we got. According to Jean, her daughter is a case study on what millennials require from their employers.
Wow.
And she's an avid cook and is on the board of advisors. I hope I pronounce this right, for the Mahawe Center for the Performing Arts.
Yeah, it's tough. It's an Indian word. Mahawe
Center for the Performing Arts in Great Barrington, Mass, and volunteers for the Columbia County Land Conservancy. Jean, welcome back to the show. How are you? Good to see you.
Great to see you. This is going to be a great conversation, Steve. And soon we'll be seeing both of you in person.
Yeah,
that's
exciting. We're doing this, of course, recording virtually. And I remember, Jean, I think the last time either you were on the show or we did some other little project together, it was sort of early pandemic, as I recall.
Right, it was.
And it's like a year and a half later, and here we still are.
You know how I remember it was early, because it was last summer and you were taking the call outside.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that sounds like me. That's for sure. Well, Jean, welcome back to the show. So great to have you. We love having you. You're always doing some interesting things, always publishing new research, doing a lot of really cool things in the HR and HR tech space. Let's just lead it off with a kind of simple one. The 2020 HR Sentiment Survey recently published. It's helping really to understand what some of the priorities are for HR leaders today, basically from their mouths, right? That's who you surveyed and you asked them what's important to them. I'd love for you to maybe give us some of the highlights of that survey, maybe a little bit of the background if you'd like about how it came together, and maybe give us one or two kind of boom. These are big important things we learned from when we asked HR leaders what was important to them.
Okay, thank you. A little bit about the demographics and how it came to be. So the survey was actually conducted in part with Future Workplace members and the members of Boston University Questrom School of Business. They have a group of CHROs called the HRBI. So together we embarked on this survey of only talking to heads of HR. So 40% of our sample was just at the CHRO level, and others were VPs of HR and corporate learning and talent. Everyone was in the United States. Okay. And key was we were looking at what are going to be the strategic priorities for HR in the next 12 months, right? So the big headline, and we've done it before in 2020. So the big headline was that employee well-being and mental health was the number one priority, with list ranked as 68% of HR leaders said that was the single biggest priority. And right behind that, 67%, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So the big shift we're seeing here is that HR, while they're all continue to be focused on the organizational changes and employee experience being one, is still a big focus. I think because of what we've all experienced in the last, believe it or not, Steve, it's a year and a half, yeah. Not just a year. I think HR leaders are now really looking at the life experience of their employees and the struggles they're facing working from home, managing homeschooling, and just keeping, you know, just ensuring their own well-being in the process.
You know, I find that so interesting, Jean, because one of the things I was looking at when I first saw the survey was sort of how those sentiments have changed and evolved even in the last year. And so it looks like there's a little move away from more the analytics, kind of the mechanics, the operations of an HR department or of a workforce. And even though it's a bad reason that maybe got us to this position, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, it seems like this is a more human, like foundational level sort of approach to the people in our companies. Is that what you're seeing and hearing when you're talking to all these CHROs?
I am, Trish. And while I'm, you know, I'm not saying that people analytics, it's actually came in number five, right?
Of course, yes.
So I'm not saying it's no longer important, but I think, you know, leaders, business leaders and HR leaders have been moved by the moment that we're all in. And I think for the first time, working from home has been the great equalizer, right? I mean, we're all doing it. It's not happening on an individual basis. It's no longer seen as a perk. And while productivity hasn't been negatively impacted, we are seeing how difficult it is to manage everything. And importantly, the lines being so blurred between work and life. I think that's why leaders are really focused now more than ever on how can they nurture employee well-being so that employees have resilience as they continue to go through just a tremendous amount of uncertainty. And I think that's what's driving this focus on well-being now more than ever.
Yeah, it's definitely a response to just the last 18 months of incredibly challenging conditions. But as Trish and I have liked to talk about, and we've talked about it on this show before, the employee mental health challenge and or crisis, if you'd prefer to even describe it that way, existed prior to the pandemic. It was just kind of maybe not emphasized as much, or as just because there was a lot of HR leaders have lots of competing priorities. And, you know, Trish knows this, you can't do all 12 things. You just can't. They can't all be the highest priority, right? In a given year. So, but it was a problem that existed before 2020, right? And it's gotten worse, right? And there's a lot of data, and you cite some of it in the research here that shows how it's gotten worse. And now at least it's also good though that the reaction and the response from the HR leadership that you surveyed is now saying, yeah, we've got to make this our top focus area this year.
Yeah. And so let's spend a moment on this mental health issue. I think companies are now really deliberately trying to destigmatize conversations about mental illness. Yes. And as you said, Steve, it's been an issue. It's not like there are so many more people now depressed or, you know, but I think it's now people are talking about it. Leaders are talking about it. And companies are really making deliberate efforts to, you know, have leaders address it in any way they can, and also train leaders on how to have these really uncomfortable and crucial conversations.
And even if you throw into just popular culture, as we record this, the Summer Olympics are still going on. They're almost over, but probably the United States' most famous Olympic athlete, right? Simone Biles talked very openly about her concerns and her issues and her struggles, as well as Naomi Osaka, the great tennis player. And the reception to those athletes talking really openly about just struggling, and they're super successful people, much like many of the leaders that you talked to, Jean, and surveyed, they're willing to share these stories, and that the society is much more willing or open to trying to listen and empathize and support them, I guess is maybe what I'd say.
Yeah, I think I was at that match, Steve, at the US Open with Williams and Osaka in September of 2019. And I love going to the US Open. And, you know, there's always a moment when the winner is declared a winner and everyone stands up and cheers. And that moment, the exact opposite happened. Naomi Osaka pulled her hat down and was in tears, and there was mass chaos. And you could see from that to this spring when she, you know, went out of the Paris Open, that last year and a half has left a really big impact on her. And these celebrities that have the courage to come forward and say mental health and mental illness is as important as having a physical illness to talk about, right? And that's what we definitely need more of, our leaders and celebrities, you know, bringing this into the open. And I think with now it being the number one issue here from HR leaders, I think, you know, HR leaders are really charged with saying, you know, what can we do to take care of our people? But the difference that I see in this year is that many of the benefits are now being added to the family.
Okay.
The it's no longer just the benefits directed to the individual worker that you're employing. With, I think, companies and forward-looking HR leaders are saying, you know, this is an interconnected system here. And what can we do to help the entire family? And, you know, one of the examples in the report was Hewlett Packard. Mm-hmm. And they have a program called HP Spirit. And they were very innovative in creating new employee resource groups on mental health and well-being. And they also created a network of substitute teachers to help their employees manage homeschooling. Again, you know, this is the issue that their workers are dealing with, and they need to provide the resources to help them. So I think that's also, I haven't seen that level of expanding the target audience in just that way before.
Yeah. I guess my follow-up, Jean, I'd love for you to comment a little bit. And there's a couple of examples in the report, and, you know, I'm the HR tech person, et cetera. And you're always a big part of HR tech as well as Trish, but we also are seeing increased use of technology tools and solutions to help employers.
Yes.
Right, offer more benefits, communicate them more effectively, extend access, as you talked about, Jean, maybe to family members, et cetera. Is there anything that you found, or just either with in putting together the report and or just with the companies you work with, on how maybe technology can play a role in allowing employers to support the mental health of employees a little bit more effectively?
Yeah, well, it's definitely, you know, the golden age of tech-enabled well-being solutions. You know, they're, you know, they, we, you know, from, you know, from Lyra Health to, to Motivosity and Thrive Global and Virgin Pulse, which has been around for a while. Mm-hmm. I think the newest one, there's a really interesting new one, which is called Secure Save. And it is it's an employer match for emergency savings accounts, because companies are making the connection between financial stress and mental well-being. And that if you are stressed about your finances, this is sort of an added level of stress, and it impacts you tremendously at work. You know, there's shock statistics where, a growing number of people have under $1,000 saved for a financial emergency, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the interesting things that you're seeing, it's actually 37% of Americans cannot cover a $400 emergency, 37% of Americans. So what we've been seeing in the past with financial programs, you know, did 401k, student loan assistance, right, for millennials. Now, I think companies are saying, well, you know what? It's we have to create a benefit that appeals to everybody. And with, you know, with the student loan assistance, they put a lot of money into that for millennials as a way to attract and retain millennials. But I think they're stepping back and they're saying, we need a benefit for all workers. And emergency savings accounts and having your employer match is a really powerful one. So it's another tech solution that I think is really, is coming out at an important time, because while it's a strong market for talent, there's still so much uncertainty. And, some people are looking for new jobs, have jobs, others are losing jobs. So,
yeah, I want to take a pause here and thank our friends at Paychex, Trish. Let's give them a shout out. This episode of the HR Happy Hour Show is brought to you by Paychex, one of the leading providers of HR, payroll, retirement, and insurance solutions for businesses of all sizes. Are you looking for ways to help your business thrive in 2021 and beyond? If so, be sure to view the great sessions from the first ever Paychex Business Conference, designed to help business leaders with insights, resources, solutions, and actionable takeaways to help them build a better workplace, a better team, and a better business. This two-day virtual event was full of prominent speakers like New York Times bestseller Cy Wakeman to the star of ABC's Shark Tank, Damon John. You do not want to miss out on these great sessions. So you can visit paychex.com/thrive. To see them all, and definitely recommend doing that if you haven't yet. Some really cool stuff from our friends at Paychex. Gene, okay, so we hit mental health, well-being, it's priority number one, of course. Priority number two, according to the sentiment survey, no surprise, right? Embedding diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout the organization, throughout the HR function, throughout the organizational culture, really. Real open questions. I'd love for you to maybe comment on that finding and maybe even some insight on what some organizations that you've talked to or surveyed are doing to try to really move the needle on that.
Yeah. So, well, certainly, as you said, Steve, no surprise after what we have gone through, not just as a country, but really the world, right? In 2020, I think the change here has been the increased transparency and accountability that companies are placing on DE&I, and so they're looking for ways to increase the number of employees that are women or Latina, a minority. But importantly, the example I used in the report, the 2021 HR sentiment survey, is that companies are creating annual reports, right? Just focused on their progress, what their goals are for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and what is their progress against their goals. So they're creating a level of accountability that they really haven't created before. And we have, when we asked how many people are doing this, we have 43% of the companies surveyed that are publicly traded have set public goals for diversity, equity, and inclusion, and another 38 are going to be doing that in 2022. So I think, you know, and it, you know, they're saying it's not enough to hire one global head of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're going to go public with this. And it comes at an interesting time, which is the SEC guidelines are now requiring public companies to report human capital metrics. And one of these is their progress on diversity, equity, and inclusion. So all of these things are coming together at the same time, and companies are, you know, really taking bold steps and creating, you know, we've already had many training programs on DE&I. And I think the issue now is, you know, how do we go beyond the one-time training program and really build a culture and make the case for sourcing a more diverse talent pool? I think that's one of the really important steps for many companies.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned, Jean, that there is so much focus on not just the measurement, but being so public, right, about it. And that's a big change, because we've been talking about some of these topics, I know, my entire career. So, you know, 20, 25 years. And so I think that's the difference, though. It's whenever you start measuring something, you actually then are held accountable to it. And when I think back to maybe when I was a practitioner or talking to other practitioners, we didn't have all the answers, but we would try and sort of put things in place. And then there was never any follow-up in terms of measurement. Can you talk maybe about some of the creative ways that companies or CHROs you're working with are approaching this from a really sort of practical hands-on standpoint? I mean, obviously they're publicly stating, we're going to measure this, we're going to do this and measure this. Are there any that you're starting to see already really kind of say, here's some successes that we're starting to see by doing it differently?
Well, I think one of the other trend that's really part of diversity, equity, and inclusion is the trend where a growing number of publicly traded companies are saying you no longer need a four-year degree to apply for a job here. If you have the right skills and capabilities and can do the job, then apply. And so what that's doing is they're tapping a whole new set of sources for talent, and that's, they're much more diverse. So I think it needs to start with the hiring manager and the recruiting manager, you know, challenging each other for what are the roles we really need, and do we need a four-year degree or not, and how can we challenge ourselves to look for talent in new places. And, you know, we have companies now creating their own boot camps. I mean, that, as you know, Steve and Trish, you know, the IT boot camps have been around for a while. Mm-hmm. And now companies are creating their own. They're saying, you know what, we're just going to, we think we can either retrain the people we have in technical skills or create our own boot camps and attract a more diverse group of talent so that people will, you know, will apply and have the right, and will ensure they have the right skills. So I think so much of it starts with, you know, definitely making a commitment, which we see more companies making, you know, starting with recruiting. But I think the other trend that's coming into play here is consumers and employees are expecting their company to take a public stand on societal issues. And that is, I think, for the first time that, you know, I've been tracking this, we have seen companies now being challenged by their employees to stand up and take a stand on these big societal issues. And that's driving the increased level of account of transparency and the seriousness of this issue to the organization.
Yeah, Jean, that's a great
thank you
point.
For those.
Yeah, it's God, there's so much we could get into on this. And I have some tech stories to tell. I'll have to save them for another day, Trish, because I've seen a couple really cool technical tools in this cycle for Top HR Products of the Year of 2021 that really do a lot of cool things to help organizations not just improve the talent pool for sourcing, which is very important, Jean, and you mentioned that, but also to really understand as people move through that funnel, that recruiting funnel and the processes, where people are falling out, where there could be some possible adverse impact, how to understand maybe potential for adverse impact, not just in at the macro level, but hey, in New York, this is happening, but in California, something else is happening, or we're hiring engineers in a certain way and we're hiring salespeople in a different way. And why is that happening? So it's really, really, really cool stuff. I don't want to name any specific company because I've seen a couple versions of this and I don't specifically remember who does what off the top of my head, but I think that's really, it's really important to understand that there are, just like in the mental health and well-being that you talked about, Jean, there's a lot of really cool and emerging technologies that can really help organizations better understand some of these issues and help them improve. Jean, before we run out of time, you talk about it some in the HR Sentiment Survey report, and prior to the show, you know, we were recording this in the beginning of August. We were talking about companies now, many companies announcing vaccination requirements for their employees to return to offices, which is going to be a huge issue in the next couple of months for sure, it seems like. But I'd love for you, Jean, maybe to comment a little bit about, as we move forward, kind of what are HR leaders thinking? How are they approaching these reopenings of offices? How are they approaching some of these thorny issues, quite frankly, around vaccinations and testing in some cases, and how to prepare for maybe longer term and extension of these working from home or hybrid arrangements that seem that they're going to last longer than I think many of us thought.
Yeah, well, that right, your last statement was so true. I know that we have monthly meetings with our members in Future Workplace. And I've always asked, you know, one of the first questions is, so when, what are your plans for return to the office? And back a year ago, people would answer, oh, yes, we're going back, and they would choose a month and a year. Now, we just asked that question last week. And 60% said, I don't know.
Wow.
It's so fluid. So I think the way it changes is when we started asking this question about vaccines, companies were very hesitant to require the vaccine for going back to the office, right? And then you saw, you know, a number of lawsuits recently where employers do have the right to ask for you to have proof of vaccination. But the really interesting thing is that the incentives that companies are offering to get vaccinated, Vanguard, the mutual fund asset manager, now is offering $1,000 to their employees to get vaccinated by October, which is their date for when they're going to be welcoming employees back. And, you know, I said to myself, now that's real money, $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, if I worked for Vanguard, I'd probably like get a tattoo that said Vanguard on my arm. If they give me $1,000, I'd probably go do that.
I mean, whoa. So, you know, I think New York City, where I live, just announced yesterday that you have to have proof of vaccination to go inside to eat in a restaurant or go to a gym or a museum. And I think what's happening is that all of the CDC rules are just changing so fast. And this is causing increased levels of stress and anxiety. I mean, I'm sure working parents are saying to themselves, will we see another year of remote homeschooling? Will schools be open in the fall?
Or even worse for schools and even some, to a lesser extent, workplaces, but will they open and then be forced to close again? Or right? Like, and we'll be doing that ping pong. Trish, your kids are in high school and we're last, they did that ping pong thing, right? A few times, right? Between home and school.
They did. And I have twins that are starting their senior year here in another week. And obviously we're, you know, wanting to have a great senior year and do all the things that you do as seniors, but also it's also thinking about colleges, you know, are they, they're looking at going away from where we live. And so that too plays into it. You know, are you willing to send your child to another state? What are the rules in that state? How is that? That was one of the main questions we've had as we've toured different campuses. How are you handling your response to COVID and to vaccination and to quarantines and all those things? So yeah, it's completely changed the entire way we live and work in a matter of 18 months.
And it's
to Jean's point, there's no sight in, it's flexible. You don't know.
Yeah.
We're dealing with uncertainty.
It's changing so fast. I feel like even like we did a show with the Rebecca Ray from the conference board.
Yeah.
It could have been just maybe a month ago, maybe
a month ago.
And I feel like that show, and we talked a lot about returning to work and some of the protocols and processes and just understand. I feel like probably half of that conversation is maybe not, doesn't make sense today based on what's happened in a month, right? Much
less. It's out of date.
I'd have to listen back to it again, but it was a good conversation, but it is moving so quickly. We'll probably do three more shows on this topic, probably in the next 3 months, right? Just to, just to stay on top of it. The vaccination thing is particularly interesting to me, and maybe we should track down like an employment lawyer to come on the show and talk about that a little bit. But, all right. So we didn't really only scrape the surface, Jean, of the HR sentiment survey. We talked really about sort of two of the big priorities, maybe two and a half of them. There are five key priorities that are outlined in the report, and we're going to encourage folks to download the report and read it. And we'll post the link in the show notes as well. But Jean, last thing, I'd be remiss personally if I didn't ask you to, as always, Jean, you're a great help to me, but also the HR tech community every year at HR Tech. In the fall, which we're, you know, that's a wood knock for me. We're going to be back all together, lots of us in person.
Let's hope.
You've got a couple sessions that you're putting together for us. I'd love you to just give us like a minute, little preview or a little teaser on what you're planning to share at HR Tech this fall.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited. I have two sessions. One is 21 HR jobs of the future. So I wrote an article with my co-author, Rob Brown, in HBR. And we also created an online course where we found people that have some of these jobs, like the head of remote work. I had no idea when we wrote that article in August of 2020 that there would be so many
people. Oh my gosh.
Right? Or the director of well-being or the director of the future of work. So Rob and I are pulling a few of those folks together, and we're going to have a panel discussion about what do they actually do in their jobs, right? These are really new HR jobs. What are some of the skills? Who do they report to? And are we going to, and what are some of the newest of the new jobs that that we see that are going to unfold? The other one is how companies are using virtual reality for soft skills. And we have three different companies, Cognizant, we have Wiley, and we have Indeed. And each of those companies are going to share an example of how they're using virtual reality either to interview new potential hires, right? Or to help employees practice making sales presentations using an avatar. So, you know, I think the other big use case we're going to talk about is using virtual reality for new hire onboarding, because you can't go to the office when you orient your new hires. So I think we've done Future Workplace quite a bit of research, and one of the things we found is almost three quarters of HR leaders either have piloted VR or say they're going to pilot VR for training in the next year. And it's not surprising. I think the real question is of all the training that is now moved from face-to-face, like soft skills and communication skills, to some other online, like virtual reality or just online, will that stay? Will that be the new normal? Yeah. And, you know, I can't imagine there being a lot. I can't imagine people going backwards. To me, in my head, it's going backwards. But we'll see. But I think companies are now really experimenting. It's not just online learning. It's how can we use VR to simulate immersive learning?
Yeah. What one of the VR tech companies sent Trish and I, and I don't know, maybe some others as well, sample headsets, tester headsets. I still have mine. I got to put it on again and try it. I only played with it a little bit, but the little bit that I did, and Trish, I don't know if you have a comment, the little bit I did with it, I was like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. You know,
it's
like,
really cool.
I had all these different courses and I could just point and click and bring up the various courses. And some of them were soft skills, as you mentioned, Dean. Others were very like, one of them was a aircraft mechanic tutorial, right? Yeah. So a hard skill, right? Like, it's cool though. It's definitely leading edge, but super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So so that's what we're going to be talking about. And, I look forward to seeing you and welcoming lots of other folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, great stuff, Jean. Thanks as always for being a part of the HR Happy Hour family. Now you're like, I think one guest appearance away from a prize.
It's a really nice gift too.
It's a really nice gift. Okay.
It's really nice.
It is.
It's not like a green jacket, like if you were a golfer, but it's pretty nice.
Yeah. It's equally prestigious. We'll leave it at that.
It's very prestigious. Yeah.
Yeah. I think only three people have won the prize, Trish, three or four. I can't remember. Doesn't matter.
Three now.
So the report is called the Future Workplace 2021 HR Sentiment Survey, 5 Strategic Priorities for the Hybrid Workplace. You can go to futureworkplace.com. There'll be a link for eBooks. You can get to the survey there. I'll also put a link in the show notes for anyone to download and read the report. It's fantastic. Really, really good stuff. Help you kind of organize your thinking about the second half of 2021 or the end of 2021 and moving forward. Gene Meister, thanks so much. Once again, great to see you. Glad you're well.
Thank you so much, Steve and Trish. See you All in right. Vegas.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
All right, good stuff, Trish. We got to thank our friends at Paychex one more time. Paychex.com/thrive for all the Thrive Business Conference content. We recommend you check that out. And Trish, check out all our show archives. Where, Trish? You know where.
Wherever you get your favorite podcast, Steve.
And go to hrhappyhour.net. So thank you for Gene Meister, for Trish McFarland. My name's Steve Bose. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. And bye for now.